There you go.
Okay, morning everybody. I'm going to credit, first of all, Tom Rogers, who's been working on with me on this paper for a while now. The history of what I'm going to talk about this morning is sort of goes back to probably at least the time of myself buying a copy of Grand Theft Auto 3, which some of you may remember was the iteration of extremely popular video game, which moved into 3D, and this notion of the game space being a kind of sandbox, a space that you could kind of do whatever you wanted to do within it. And of course, what most people wanted to do, or were actually constrained to do, was to kill people, to beat them up, to run over pedestrians and all the rest of it. And actually, I was quite horrified by that. And it might sound a little bit moral and a bit pathetic almost, but I was slightly appalled at the idea that this private experience that I was having in relation to that kind of game space was something that being shared by millions of other people, and that there was absolutely sort of fixed on a very sort of antisocial vision of the city, a very antisocial notion of humanity more generally. Now, since then, I've learned to love Grand Theft Auto. I recently completed GTA 5. But what I want to do is kind of step back, actually, from the kind of moral reading of what's going on here, and to present some reflections that Tom and I have been generating in relation to what's going on more generally in relation to played space, to video games more generally, and to develop this notion of what we call the murder box, which I will flesh out as we go along. So what we want to do in this paper, really, so in the next sort of 20 minutes or so, I want to talk to you about what we consider to be not only the kind of implicit sort of horror, the sort of visceral element, particularly as, you know, computer processing power has accelerated to the point that actually, in actual fact, I was looking at a clip from Grand Theft Auto 5 this morning and actually thought it was a real film of Los Angeles. But we're getting a sort of vision of space which is both violent, but it's also very alluring. And one from research that I did some time ago when I was in Australia, talking to people who play Grand Theft Auto extensively, they're actually not just interested in killing people and sort of the narrative structure of the game and sort of getting ahead. They're also interested in just how beautiful the space looks. They're interested in traversing those urban landscapes, and there's a sort of intrinsic satisfaction from just circulating through those very attractive urban landscapes, or as is the case now, rural landscapes. So we're trying to sort of map or to place these very sort of alluring landscapes within the sort of cultural sort of formations that we see around us, with particular reference not to just things like, not things like Super Mario World or whatever, the sort of the cutesy stuff, but the what we call murder games. So where the plotting or the enactment of murder, of the killing of others, is a central component of the game narrative. So games like Hitman, games like Grand Theft Auto, that we've had a version of the Saw films made into a video game. I could reel off, you know, a massive list of them, and I'm going to be talking about some of them in a bit more detail in a moment. But what we're suggesting is what's going on in those spaces is a sense of release from ordinary sort of constraints. And this is obviously one of the major attractions, is that publicly sanctioned and controlled conduct, all of that is stripped away within this immersion into this kind of murder box space. So we draw on, in the written version of the paper, we draw on Agamben and his notion of zones of social exception to think of ways in which information communication technology, the person sort of screen interface, and the immersion in these kind of landscapes allows people to behave in exceptional ways, in ways that sort of offer up the other or other characters, other sort of beings within those environments as something that is ripe for sort of slaughter, revenge, or the enactment of homicide in some form or another. And one of the key things to acknowledge here is that these essentially sort of private spirit experiences are also mass cultural products. I mean, I can't. Tom, do we know? Can you remember how many copies of Grand Theft Auto sold in the first week, or any of the key?
It broke all the commercial records for sales. It made billions within a couple of days, I think.
So what you're seeing here, and you probably all know this, is the popularity of a format which. By far exceeds many of the sort of Hollywood blockbusters that we see being released. So let's just sort of go back a little way to commentators, the late Freud, the later phase of Freud's writings in Civilization and Its Discontents, where he promotes this very either sort of cynical or very accurate reading of what is going on in relation to a human nature. The idea that the sort of predatory element of the human sort of aspect is something that is sort of embedded within us, and when it is possible to sort of see that released, we will see atrocity, we will see forms of humiliation, pain, and torture, which of course now I think map very well onto criminological sort of analyses of our culture. Writers like Mike Presdy, who talk about a sort of culture of spite, essentially. And we see that running through YouTube clips, through obsessions with sort of fail videos and all the rest of it. And I'll come back to some of the more extreme forms of that in a moment. More recently, social psychologists like Sue Gerhardt, in her book The Selfish Society, talk, at least in part, about the way that information communication technology within the front room, within the domestic home, capitalism has sort of, in a sense, captured the developmental stages of adolescence in ways that are themselves very antisocial. Think about writers like Mark Fisher and his book Capitalist Realism, the kind of twitchy, can't sit still, plugged in, screen-obsessed people that actually probably we all are, but the kind of kids that we are teaching who've been sort of colonised by that technology, and the sort of very addictive nature of the sort of feedback loops promoted by video games and all the rest of it. And just a quick word, in relation to what we're sort of saying here, is we're not trying to promote a kind of, who would promote a kind of hypodermic syringe model of sort of media effects, the idea that in watching violent films we will become violent. I mean, things have become much more sophisticated than that. Writers like Gerbner and his colleagues developed the idea of cultivation theory, which is much more about the general flow and diet of exposure. But the suggestion that prolonged immersion in particular diets may then lead to problematic or antisocial outcomes. So we would point towards sort of tendencies and problems that may emerge, but we're not trying to make sort of a simple correspondence analysis between violent content and violent conduct. And of course, some people would argue that the very notion of sort of release that might come through sort of catharsis through gaming might itself be a kind of outlet that might actually stem public forms of violence. But the question then becomes not just this idea of a massed media. As we move into a bespoke form of media content where we are choosing what we want to expose ourselves to, the idea of cultivation becomes much more powerful. If I'm a 15-year-old and all I want to do is play Grand Theft Auto all day, watch pornography all night, etc., I'm not interested in centralised media services that tell me what the news is in relation to a storm in America or whatever. I'm just fixated on these very libidinal, violent and sexual sort of outlets in relation to the kind of media and content that I engage with. What kind of social subjects do we produce under those circumstances? So we certainly think there is an effect, there is a problem here, or there's an issue to be explored, but it's probably very complex. Ruth was talking about sort of artifacts in relation to sort of morbid fascination, and some of you may have come across Bum Fights, which was the project of a couple of Los Angeles graduates who paid street homeless people to fight each other to extract their teeth on video, to perform various kinds of atrocities of that nature. They were then filmed, it was bundled into videos which sold by the shed load, making those people very very rich. Splicing together various footage from the Middle East, people being executed, jihadist recruitment videos and all the rest. These kind of, you know, what Ballard would call a kind of atrocity exhibition, these sort of, this phantasmagoria in a kind of DVD VHS era is now something that, you know, I could open up my iPad and get this Bumfights is on YouTube, which we could access in an instant now. So the idea of the murder box, this is, we're trying to suggest that we can drop into these photoreal, immersive, interactive spaces in ways that, you know, I think are open to sort of significant sort of investigation in terms of what kind of impact that's having. And the suggestion that, that, in a sense, this kind of horror becomes a form of entertainment, particularly for the affluent. There's something slightly problematic or uneasy in terms of a kind of analysis of the kind of culture that we now inhabit, where we're watching for entertainment, other scenes of carnage, as the producers call it. You know, I could equally be talking about Human Centipede, I could be talking about Hostel, or many of those films that some of you may have watched. What we're also seeing in games like Grand Theft Auto and others is not just an open interactive environment where you theoretically can engage in certain forms of antisocial behaviour, but actually certain what we might call a form of script closure, whereby you're actually forced to do certain things that you might find actually quite morally problematic. So the scene that I had had a real problem with is where you are compelled by a sort of FBI-type agency to torture five times somebody that they have recruited. You can't probably see it at the back. It says, between torturing sessions, use button B to view Mr. K's health and heart rate on the ECG monitor so you can inject adrenaline to keep him awake so you can continue to torture him. You turn to a table, you interact with your control in relation to extracting teeth, to smashing their kneecaps off, etc., etc. And you have to do this to progress in the game. So we've had lots of debates about there isn't a female character in Grand Theft Auto. Well, you know, there's other elements of gameplay which are deeply problematic. Here's another one which some of you may be familiar with, which was the kind of fury over the no Russian sort of sequence within Call of Duty Modern Warfare, where you are compelled to join a group of Russian or Chechen terrorists and emerge into the waiting hall of an airport and basically shoot everyone in sight in a very sort of bloodless way. But again, you're compelled to engage in this, or in actual fact, sorry, I do remember actually, you were allowed to not do it, but that was the sort of the narrative that you were sort of being drawn into. I put this quote up because I think it sort of highlights the sort of the complexity of what's going on here, where people are reminded of how real life is like gameplay. You know, rather than saying I'm playing a game which is rather like what it would be like to sort of fight in Afghanistan or whatever, these the sort of flows of reference points are working both ways. There's a sense of sort of cultural blurring between these kind of very violent, immersive spaces and what we see on the television and so on. I haven't got time to sort of go into the whole recruitment exercise that is video gaming now. I mean, there's a much more sophisticated, knowing way in which, for example, the American Army recruits by offering up free software where people can play games, and if they do well, the American Army actually get in touch with you and say, why don't you come down to this ranch at the weekend and use the latest state-of-the-art weapons, and hey, you know, why don't you go off and offer yourselves up as cannon fodder for us as a result of picking people out in that way. So that sort of, I have a real problem, the kind of games that I have a problem with are actually the military games. They're sort of setting up of a sort of false opposition, the sense of attack against vulnerable, necessarily terrorist others that fuel the kind of narrative structure of many of those kind of games. So let's just quickly talk a bit more about what we mean by this sort of genre that we're sort of kind of trying to define here, the murder game. This is sort of some of the artwork from a game you may know called Hitman, which involves you do well if you don't kill any other people other than the person that you're supposed to target, but literally planning, disguising yourself and then killing the target. So what we're saying is that distinct from sort of shoot 'em ups, platform games and all the rest of it, the focus of this kind of genre is on killing. There's no other part of the narrative that's really celebrated or promoted. It's essentially about that. There's, if you like, a suspension of social physics. So the ordinary play of everyday life, of sanctions and controls, is stripped away. You're invited into this space precisely because you can do what you want. Think of the kind of infamous rampages within Grand Theft Auto, where, you know, kill as many Haitians as possible in central New York in the next 30 seconds. You know, that kind of heavily racialized, heavily sort of violent sort of structure to the gameplay. So this is a very cathartic space, and I should ask maybe a show of hands of how many people have played Grand Theft Auto and no doubt enjoy that sense of just going crazy. And this comes out of a lot of what the people I spoke to who played Grand Theft Auto really love, is that you just go nuts. You know, just spend 10 minutes shooting as many pedestrians as possible before the police come along, and then you're chased, and you know, everything just goes absolutely wild. On the back of that, what we are sort of trying to define here then as the murder box, this type of space, there's the sense that all is permitted. Now, at this point, we could sort of go deviate entirely, actually, into the whole genre of extreme pornography, actually. But I won't. That's another element of the paper. But suffice to say that it's quite interesting that Eli Roth, if you listen to his interview that he does in relation to the film Hostel, this is a film where people are recruited and secreted away in Eastern Europe. They are tortured and murdered by rich businessmen from America and so on, and they pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for the privilege. Now, Eli Roth said he made that film because it was now clear to him, and you know, it's maybe a sort of apocryphal story, that in places in Thailand, people were selling children to be killed in that way. Now, that's one of the sort of urban mythology that is impossible to really get to the root of. I kind of, knowing what we do about inequalities, poverty, gender relations in various global regions, I'd be surprised if it hasn't happened at all. But his sense is that all is permitted within certain kinds of space, and the juxtaposition he makes is between the brothels in Amsterdam, where these young, full-blooded males go and do whatever they want to the prostitutes, and then end up being the roles being reversed, where they go to Eastern Europe and become the prey of these businessmen from America. The tendency is for the narrative structure of those kind of games to essentially impel a form of subjugation, that you take on a role in which the complete destruction is not only permitted but encouraged by the narrative. So think of a game like Max Payne, where drug-fueled crazies kill your wife and your baby, and therefore the way is open for you to go crazy, to sort of shoot everybody in sight, in a sense. What we're calling the murder box is also this kind of interaction between ourselves as flesh, if you like, and the interface that we have with screens, permitted by new information communication technologies, that allow us to sort of drop into those spaces very rapidly. And so while I'm focusing on video games in this presentation, other areas that we've been looking at are the sort of torture porn films like Saw and all the rest of it, forms of tourism such as people, I think, going to Cambodia and paying to use a rocket launcher to kill a cow, for example, sort of one step away from that sort of commodification of the sort of human-to-human form of torture and murder and so on. But obviously, video games, but also pornography, which we go into in much more detail in the paper. So just a quick few examples in sort of popular, sort of some popular reference points. This is the game BioShock, which is one of those games that doesn't just allow you to sort of kill people within the sort of ordinary structure of the game, but also, you know, you can sort of keep on going. You can keep on extracting sort of blood and dismemberment from hitting people once they are finally killed. Manhunt, a very infamous game. The second one was actually banned in the UK, although you can actually still buy it for about £3 in town, some bizarre reason. This was a game in which you were being filmed as part of a snuff movie. So your killings, in order to get out of this compound and be released, were you know, being made into a film. So a playful reference to the kind of awful kind of popular culture that we now inhabit. If you go onto YouTube and type in Manhunt, people load up whole sequences of them killing lots of people and sort of showing off how they sort of took out sort of lots of baddies. And although the graphics aren't terribly realistic, the sort of body physics is very realistic, and it is kind of slightly unsettling to watch, to say the least. The second iteration of that game was actually, as I say, banned by the British Board of Film Classification because it provided this utterly sort of overwhelmingly bleak, fixated structure within which you acted in sort of very extremely violent ways towards this sort of cannon fodder and supply of baddies that you had to sort of cut down. But again, predicated on, you know, you can do this because you need to escape, because they're scum, etc., etc. Going back to the Hitman game, the other thing that's been controversial there is not just the sense of, in a sense, doing whatever you want within that game space, but also the very highly sort of sexualized, highly violent marketing machine that is attached to this game. Much of it, actually, there's one totally bizarre video where nuns in stockings and suspenders produce rocket launchers and try and shoot you and everything, and which actually has nothing to do with the game, but it promotes this kind of totally wild reading of the game in such a way that it generates controversy and thereby, you know, generates good sales. But there's a series of marketing campaigns that produce this very sort of sexualized and violent sort of imagery. So what I think we're basically trying to suggest here, and I don't suppose it's terribly insightful in some respects, is that these are morbid spaces. There's a sense of fascination with death, with dismemberment, with total domination of the other, the ability to act in very extreme ways that you particularly see in games like Grand Theft Auto, which are extraordinarily popular. The other thing is you see that kind of cultural bleed whereby that kind of product, that kind of experience is actually seeping down through the generational structure. I have a partner whose son is 8, who plays Grand Theft Auto 5 because somebody's friend's brother is 15 and has it, and he shouldn't have it either. But you know, you can see how the contact sort of spills out. So these are, in a sense, kind of fantasy spaces, but they're also presented in very realistic ways. And a lot of the conversations that we had with Grand Theft Auto gamers is that tacitly, they understand these to be both plausible and realistic representations of the social structure of the city, of how gangs operate within the city, and so on. And they see this as a largely realistic representation. It's designed to be like how cities are, how people are within cities, and so on. So I've already said then that the kind of social physics and the social rule structure of those spaces is essentially suspended. But notions of stealth, headshots, you know, we've got army commanders in Afghanistan saying it's actually wonderful now because we get these new recruits and they're ready to go. They've been taking headshots for the last 15 years, virtually in these kind of spaces, and they're just quite happy to do it now. They've been sort of primed, they've been sort of denuded of some kind of sort of moral reflex in relation to those contexts. Notions of sort of guerrilla tactics, of assassination, of stealth, games like Metal Gear Solid, which go back a long way, Bioshock and all the rest, that sort of sense of lurking in the shadows, sniper games, all those kind of themes, that sort of sense of domination over the target being very strong elements of this. So let me just wrap up then in a couple of minutes, just turning back to the sort of preeminent example of what we're trying to discuss here. He is your id. This is Trevor Phillips in Grand Theft Auto, this absolutely overwhelmingly, excessively violent, brutal male figure, one of three that you take control of within the game. This is a box that you can just drop into and have a kind of psychopathic holiday, as one of our respondents talked about it. You can go into this space, you can go nuts, you can do whatever you want. In that sort of structure, life becomes essentially cheap. The bum tunnel, the homeless people in the tunnel in Grand Theft Auto 3, where to get through the mission, you essentially had to run over homeless people in this tunnel. All these kind of objectionable aspects of the structure of those social worlds in which you know, life is rendered secondary. The city of Los Santos, which is the Grand Theft Auto V city, becomes a kind of simulated camp in the way that Agamben would talk about it, the sense that you know, brutality is demanded, but also those people that we find within that space are expendable. We can do whatever we want to them. The fact that they are in that space renders them up for, if you like, a sacrifice to our, if not bloodlust, then, you know, just simply playing through the mechanics of the game. Just finally end on, you know, a point made by Roberto Saviano, the author of Gomorrah, the analysis of the Italian Naples Mafia, in which he says that, you know, actually the effect of media within the Mafia is actually extreme. Loads of the people that he talked to and circulated within talk, you know, they model how they behave on characters from The Godfather. They use those tropes, they use those ways of talking. And I think, you know, Grand Theft Auto, the way that kids talk in playgrounds, the language, the shared notion of, and celebration really, of this kind of excessive space is something that I think we're going to see more and more of. Now, I'm not necessarily condemning that, I'm just saying it's there. What are we to make of it? How are we to read it? What kind of impacts stem from that? I'll finish, you know, with reference to other points that we don't have time to go into here. And I thought I had a... Yeah. So...
We've still got a few minutes.
Just to mention, then, this is Trevor going crazy after bumping into an irritating hipster. And you have to shoot as many hipsters in 60 seconds or whatever. I'm judging by your reaction that you'd all enjoy it a great deal. I've put the webpage there so you can get a sense of, you know, where the game lies at its most extreme, perhaps. The boundaries sort of cross also in relation to gaming, where we've seen the example of the Japanese game Replay, where you enact a kind of revenge on two generations within of females within a family. Setting out to rape these women within this kind of context. The Japanese game designers sort of wondering what all the fuss was about when people went absolutely crazy about the game. And this sort of blurring of sort of real snuff movies, apparently, in relation to game examples like Hostel, Saw, and I don't know if anyone's seen Vacancy, where people are being filmed as though, you know, they're going to be killed within this hotel room, and that's going to be filmed. They find cameras in the room and so on. So we see this sort of sense of the snuff movie becoming this kind of cultural, mainstream cultural trope. If you look at how popular films like Saw have become, you know, massive box office popularity. So one way of just finally reading what we're seeing here is to sort of turn back to an interview that I found with J.G. Ballard, I think from the, might have been 1970s, where he talks about what he's exploring, the kind of literature that he's writing here, is a kind of a form of elective psychopathology. So people are engaging in extreme antisocial conduct because it's fun, because they're making the choice to sort of dip in and out of that. You know, I'm not a paedophile, I was just interested in looking at certain kinds of material to see how I respond to that. This notion of kind of experimental perversity, of dipping into these spaces and behaving in extreme ways on an experimental basis, I think something that we want to explore in a bit more detail. So I feel like I have been kind of talking a bit too long, so I'll just leave the conclusions up and then we can have 5 minutes for chat. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, should we do some questions for Roland and then we'll move on to Gareth?
I'm Tom.
I'm Tom.
Yeah, sorry.